Hello, this is Terry Malloy here to read The Week, the best of U.S. and international media. On our cover this week, we have the White House Nationalism, America's Growing Terrorist Threat. This is the August 16, 2019 edition, all you need to know about everything that matters. One of our main stories, will trade war start a recession with Xi Jinping? The last word, an uppity immigrant's love letter. Talking points. Is she a cook or a moral beacon? Marianne Williamson. And we'll begin with our cover story, which is America's Carnage in Texas and Ohio. What happened? The nation was thrust into a fraught national reckoning on guns, white nationalism, and domestic terrorism this week, after at least 31 people were killed and dozens more wounded in mass shootings in Texas and Ohio. In El Paso, 21-year-old Patrick Crucius shot and killed 22 people and wounded 26 others with a semi-automatic rifle inside a crowded Walmart before surrendering to police. Just before driving from an affluent Dallas suburb to commit the shooting, the gunman posted a racist manifesto on Achon, a message board frequented by white supremacists, in which he said the attack was a response to the Hispanic invasion of Texas and open borders, and the Democrats' attempt to enact a political coup by importing and then legalizing millions of new voters. This was an echo of President Trump's frequent rhetoric about the influx of Central American migrants at the border, but the shooter said he developed his anti-immigrant views before Trump. Less than 15 hours later in Dayton, 24-year-old Connor Betts used an AR-15 to kill 9 people and wound 27 outside a bar in a popular nightlife area in a rampage that lasted only 30 seconds. Before he was killed by police. The shooter's sister was among the victims. A self-declared leftist on social media, the gunman had a history of threatening women and kept a hit list of people he wanted to kill or rape, acquaintances said. One of the gunman's girlfriends said he was obsessed with mass shootings and told her that he heard voices and wanted to hurt a lot of people. President Trump visited Dayton and El Paso in the aftermath of the shootings, where he faced protests for his opposition to gun control and his anti-immigrant rhetoric. Representative Veronica Escobar, Democrat from Texas, a Hispanic congresswoman who represents the El Paso area, said Trump was not welcome in her city. Words have consequences, and the president has made my community and my people the enemy, Escobar said. What the editorial said. White nationalist terrorism is a serious and growing reality, said the Los Angeles Times. According to the Anti-Defamation League, 73.3% of all extremist-related deaths in the U.S. over the past decade have been linked to right-wing terrorists, like the El Paso shooter. In a televised speech, he read off a teleprompter. President Trump belatedly called on Americans to condemn white supremacy and hatred. He should start with himself. Trump has been fanning the flames of division and fear for years. And while the El Paso gunman may have learned to view Hispanic immigration as an infestation of vermin from online cesspools, Trump has legitimized that bigotry and brought it to the mainstream. What about the Dayton shooter? Asked the Wall Street Journal. The mass murderer in Ohio appears to have had leftist politics. More importantly, he was a deeply disturbed man who is allegedly obsessed with mass shootings and openly fantasized about committing violence. The twisted motivations of mass killers are varied and often too convoluted to sort into any clear ideology. The common thread is that both the El Paso and Dayton shooters were angry, isolated young men who felt alienated in our increasingly atomistic culture. Blaming individual politicians or ideologies is pointless and counterproductive. What the columnists said. There are disturbing parallels between radical Islam and white nationalism, said the Jonathan Last and the Bulwark.com. Just like followers of ISIS and other Islamic terror groups, white supremacists are obsessed with purity and use social media to spread their agenda, radicalize others, and celebrate terrorist acts. Imagine how the country would have responded if the El Paso shooter had labeled himself a jihadist, said David French in NationalReview.com. Law enforcement needs the resources and the mandate to pursue racist radicals with the same intensity as ISIS. It's time to declare war on white nationalist terrorism. That will never happen while Trump is in office, said Michelle Goldberg in the New York Times. The Trump administration has slashed millions of dollars in funding dedicated to monitoring and combating white supremacist terrorism, while signaling to Justice Department employees that such efforts would be unwelcome. A former FBI supervisor has said agents feel reluctant to investigate groups and individuals that the president perceives as his base. Meanwhile, Trump has done more than anyone to mainstream white nationalist tropes, and he probably couldn't bottle up the hideous forces he's helped unleash even if he wanted to. It's not just Trump, said Adam Suhr in the Atlantic.com. Right-wing media increasingly traffics in white nationalist talking points. Fox News' Tucker Carlson, who declared this week that the threat of white supremacy is a hoax, regularly depicts the browning of America through immigration as a dire threat. Laura Ingraham has told viewers that Democrats want to replace you with illegal immigrants, a version of the Great Replacement conspiracy theory embraced by the El Paso shooter. America, we have a serious white supremacy problem. What next? Federal agencies are scrambling to meet the domestic terrorism threat with limited resources, said Laura Stricker in the NBCNews.com. 2 years ago, the Homeland Security Office, responsible for combating domestic terrorism, had a staff of 16 employees and a budget of $21 million. Staffing cuts have left it with just 8 employees and a budget of $2.6 million. Roughly 80% of the FBI's counterterrorism agents are focused on foreign ideologies, like Islamic extremism. That includes agents investigating homegrown jihadists. Federal officials also face legal obstacles in pursuing domestic terrorism, said Sabrina Tavamis in the New York Times. Obtaining wiretap warrants is more difficult, and white supremacist rhetoric, unlike jihadist calls for violence, is protected by the First Amendment. If they did the same thing that they did with the Muslims, said Martin R. Stolar, a New York civil rights lawyer, the blowback would be outrageous. The growing trade war with China puts economy at risk. What happened? President Trump slapped a fresh round of tariffs on Chinese exports last week, escalating his year-long trade war and roiling global markets after China showed little sign of softening in the latest round of talks. Trump said the U.S. would impose a 10% duty on another $300 billion in Chinese exports on September 1st, adding to 25% tariffs already levied on $250 billion in goods. The announcement came one day after U.S. negotiators returned from fruitless talks in Shanghai, and Trump castigated China for breaking a promise to buy American farm products he claims Chinese President Xi Jinping made in June. That's the problem with China. They just don't come through, Trump tweeted. China responded by devaluing the yuan to its lowest level against the dollar since 2008. vowing to halt American farm imports while also taxing those recently purchased. The effects of the new tariffs could quickly become apparent in stores. 62% of the products slated for tariffs are consumer goods, including apparel and footwear, toys and cell phones. By one estimate, the cost of an iPhone will jump $75 to $100. Stocks retreated globally on the news, including a 2.9% tumble in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. That was the index's worst single-day performance since December 24th, as investors braced for the possibility of a protracted global slump. In the U.S., Moody's and Analytics raised the chances of recession over the next year to 50% from 35%. Trump's tariffs came one day after the Federal Reserve cut interest rates for the first time since 2008, partly, Chairman Jerome Powell said, in response to downside risks from the trade tensions. What the editorials said. Trump's latest tariff salvo is no more likely to produce a deal than previously rounds, said Bloomberg.com. The pain of the levies is primarily felt not by China, but by the U.S. consumers shouldering higher costs and manufacturers who must overhaul intricate supply chains. Moreover, Trump's unreasonable demands have unwisely painted any prospective compromise as in Chinese surrender. He would have done better to find a way to give China an out and spin concession as being in China's interest. Trump's trade war has now become a currency war, said the Wall Street Journal. After China devalued the yuan, the U.S. Treasury Department branded China a currency manipulator, a provocative designation that can trigger still more tariffs. Global markets tanked. Any further devaluation could trigger a debt crisis among Chinese companies that must service hundreds of billions of dollars in debts with the devalued yuan. If China's economy plunges into recession, it will end badly for everyone. What the columnists said. This trade war is pushing us into what former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers calls the most dangerous financial moment since the 2009 financial crisis, said Heather Long in the Washington Post. The consensus on Wall Street is that it's going to get worse before it gets better. The U.S. economic growth has already cooled to a 2% pace. Now the tariffs dampen the prospects even more, and the bond market is signaling a coming recession. Ironically, the market's stumble over China and the weakening economy could give Trump the rate he wants from the Fed, said Shuli Ren in Bloomberg.com. Trump used the yen devaluation as a cudgel to berate the Fed and push for lower interest rates. As Beijing well knows, sometimes a leader's belligerence toward other nations is really aimed at an audience at home. Trump is fighting the right fight at the right time, said Salvatore Balbones in nationalinterest.org. China is feeling real pain as manufacturers flee to Vietnam and India, while the American economy employs record numbers of people. Over time, China will only become stronger, and protecting American intellectual property will be more difficult. If 1989 was the historical moment to squeeze the Soviet Union, then 2019 is the historical moment to squeeze China. With his latest gambit, Trump is jeopardizing his chances in 2020, said Jennifer Rubin in the Washington Post. His staunch red state supporters took another blow when China vowed to stop buying U.S. agricultural products. With a suicidal trade war, Trump eliminates the sole rationale for his reelection and economic recovery. The controversy of the week, guns. Will any new laws make a difference? The epidemic of mass shootings in America is really not a complicated problem to puzzle out, said David Frum in TheAtlantic.com. In statements after last weekend's back-to-back massacres by young men armed with weapons of war, President Trump and other Republicans variously blamed the phenomena on mental illness, video games, declining religiosity, hatred, and evil. But these same problems exist in other developed nations, and yet it's only in America that citizens are shot to death en masse with numbing regularity. The Japanese, for example, spend far more per capita on video games, but average fewer than 10 gun deaths a year, compared with our 40,000. What's different about our country? Simple. This is the only developed nation where it is not only legal, but easy and convenient to amass a private arsenal of mass slaughter. That needs to change, said the New York Post in an editorial, starting with a reimposition of an assault weapon ban. We can't stop all disaffected young men from venting their rage on innocent civilians, but at least we can take away the murder machines that let them rack up such horrific body counts. There is no such thing as an assault weapon, said Charles Cook in TheNationalReview.com. The AR-15 and AK-47 used in Dayton and El Paso respectively have the same rate of fire and are only cosmetically different from every other semi-automatic rifle on sale in the U.S., including most hunting rifles. The AR-15 has become the most popular rifle in America, with up to 15 million in private hands, and the Supreme Court has ruled that the Second Amendment protects weapons that are in common use. The reality is that every gun is designed to kill, said David Harsanyi in TheFederalist.com. Short of mass confiscation of 300 million guns already in circulation, which isn't going to happen, no law is going to stop a determined madman or terrorist from obtaining a weapon and fulfilling his bloody fantasies. It's true that no law can legislate the crazies and the truly evil out of existence, said Scott Jennings, former advisor to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, in the Louisville Courier-Journal. But there are common-sense measures that would make a difference. A ban on high-capacity magazines, in particular, would force mass shooters to stop and reload, giving police a better chance to end their rampages. In Dayton, the shooter used a 100-round drum that enabled him to fire 41 rounds in just 30 seconds. Both gun owners and gun control advocates can support red flag laws, said David French in TheNationalReview.com, which would let authorities seize the guns of the dangerously mentally ill, domestic abusers, and people exhibiting threatening behavior. If properly drafted to ensure due process, such laws can remove firearms from people who have demonstrated by their own conduct that they're not fit to own a weapon. This grieving nation shouldn't expect much change, said Jill Lawrence in USA Today. Republicans don't dare jeopardize their political identities as the people who let you keep your guns, any kind you want, as many as you want, with magazines as big as you want. Such absolutism may no longer be a political winner, said Ed Kilgore in the nymag.com. Once powerful NRA is riven by scandal and is losing its clout, while Republicans are worried that their slavish opposition to gun control is alienating millions of suburban moderates. A growing number of Americans are frightened and utterly disgusted by the carnage and will no longer settle for politicians' thoughts and prayers. Talking points this week. Williamson, moral beacon, or kook? Self-help guru Marianne Williamson will not be the Democratic nominee for the president, said Dana Milbank in the Washington Post. But hopefully the one who will be is taking note. While other Democrats bickered over details of their health care plans and other policies during last week's debate, Williamson, an impossibly youthful 67-year-old with a comical patrician accent, repeatedly stole the spotlight with a cut-the-crap sensibility. She spoke plainly and passionately about the moral danger that Donald Trump and white nationalism pose to our nation. This wonkiness, she said, won't dispel this dark psychic force of the collectivized hatred that this president is bringing up in this country. She's absolutely right, which was why she dominated Google searches and Twitter right after the debate. I hate to crash the tarot card reading party, said Brian Boyle in the Los Angeles Times, but Williamson is a loon. She has a history of anti-science, anti-vaccination rhetoric, and believes cancer and AIDS are physical manifestations of psychic scream that can be cured with love and hugs. Oh, and have I mentioned she shares spiritual advisor and officiated at Elizabeth Taylor's 8th wedding at Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch? The fact that political pundits are lavishly praising on Williamson's performance shows they've learned precious little from Donald Trump's rise to power, said Zach Beauchamp in Vox.com. Wasn't too long ago that they showered attention on another entertainment celebrity, kook, who had no chance of getting the nomination. Look at how that ended up. Just stop already. Williamson might be a wackadoodle, said David Brooks in the New York Times, but she knows how to beat Trump. As she so keenly understands, this election is not about health care, trade, or any of the usually worthy policy issues that would otherwise dominate presidential primary. Trump's perversion of American norms has turned this election into a question of who we are as people, our national character. At stake are honesty, pluralism, and the moral atmosphere in which we raise our children. As Williamson puts it, this man, our president, is not just a politician, he's a phenomenon. Other Democrats also better realize that only a moral uprising of the American people will be enough to overcome what Trump has unleashed and return us to decency. Reagan, was he really a racist? Conservatives have always insisted that their hero, Ronald Reagan, didn't have a racist bone in his body, said Josh Levin in Slate.com. But last week, a recording emerged of Ronald Reagan talking about black people behind closed doors, and it wasn't pretty. In the tape of a 1971 phone call with President Nixon, then California Governor Reagan angrily complains about watching Tanzanian officials dancing in celebration after the United Nations voted to recognize the People's Republic of China. To see those monkeys from those African countries, damn them, they're still uncomfortable wearing shoes, unquote, Reagan tells Nixon, who cackles in response. In a subsequent call, a giddy Nixon described Reagan's rant about African cannibals and said that governors spoke for the racist Americans. Look, Reagan's use of the word monkeys was admittedly sickening, said Jay Nordlinger in the NationalReview.com. But it was uncharacteristic. In private letters during his presidency, Reagan wrote about being frustrated and angered by the attempts to paint me as a racist. In speeches, he constantly emphasized the common humanity of Americans of every race and applied that universalism to foreign affairs, working up to advance human rights in China, Cuba, and the Soviet Union. Ask anyone who knew Reagan, said Paul Kenger, in Spectator.org, and they will tell you that he was not a racist, period. There are no other records of him making similar comments, which can't be said for Lyndon Johnson, Harry Truman, and plenty of other Democrats. Racism to Reagan was a sin, and his entire life reflects that view. Black people would tell you otherwise, said Renee Graham in the Boston Globe. Reagan's popularized the vile stereotype of poor black women as welfare queens, and he exploited it to attack housing benefits, aid to children in poverty, and food stamp programs. His disdain for AIDS victims was disastrous for straight black women as well as gays, and he was similarly blind to the racially skewed consequences of his war on drugs. By launching his 1980 presidential campaign with an ode to states' rights in Mississippi, Reagan clearly proved he was willing to tap into white fear and resentment. That cynical Republican strategy has a direct lineage from Nixon to Reagan to Donald Trump. The Gipper's 1980s campaign slogan, after all, was, quote, "Let's make America great again," unquote. A poll watch this week, 22% of millennials ages 23 to 38 say they have no friends, and 30% say they always or often feel lonely, higher than any other generation. 16% of Gen Xers and 9% of baby boomers say they don't have any friends. This comes from YouGov. Insulin, its high price is killing people. Jessamyah David Scheer Radcliffe might still be alive if he could have afforded his insulin, said Sarah Jones in nymag.com. Instead, the Minnesota man, 21, died in June after trying to ration his supply, and his death is not an isolated event. Insulin costs have skyrocketed as a trio of pharmaceutical companies has essentially cornered the market with no generic alternative. A vial that sold for $35 in 2001 is now retailing for almost $300. This has led to devastating choices for many of the 7.5 million diabetic Americans. Well, that's it for this week. I'll be back next Sunday to read the week. Have a great week.